we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz, coming to you from the King's Theatre, South Sea. We start with an announcement heard on the Waterloo to Woking Express, spotted in the Times and read by Brian Perkins.
If there's a train driver on this train who knows the way to Portsmouth, please could he come to the cab?
Thanks to Derek and Margaret Severs of Bristol for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Linda Smith and the newcomer, Chris Addison. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Armando Iannucci. Linda, who believes that if you keep this one up, you'll annoy a lot of people?
Yes, well, this is Michael Howard, who is very worried that UKIP are going to split the Tory vote in the European elections. He's very concerned because the UK Independence Party are just very temptingly abnormal. They all look strangely dressed. Men in orange-faced men in 1970s leisure wear. And he can see how they might be quite alluring to Tory voters. And what he's trying to say, look, people, I know they seem so temptingly strange and nasty, but we're still strange and nasty, honestly.
UKIP actually sounds like a packet of nuts. UKIP.
It sounds like your response to watching the party political broadcast by Kilroy Silk. You see it, UKIP.
Yes. It's Kilroy Silk and Joan Collins, and I sort of wonder what the UKIP battle bus is like, with sunbeds down either side.
And you just hope that Kilroy Silk is going to be able to hang on to those last few fronds of hair until the election, as they gum down. And as for her, you know, she's had her face lifted so often, if she wants to smile, she has to cross her legs to give herself some slack.
Lord, one of the Tory peers who decided that he was jumping ship for the occasion, Lord Pearson of Rannoch, said that they were the only party that could be trusted to deal with the corrupt octopus in Brussels. What is that? And that's what these people have in their head. There's an octopus in Brussels with a fedora and a cigar in four of its tentacles, goosing a secretary with three others and phoning in dodgy bets with its last ten. And I swear he's going down in a fourth.
In the European Parliament, is there a whole fleet of translators who translate everything into octopus?
That's it, yes.
It's a mix of red tape and black ink. But they...
But don't underestimate the calamari vote.
We have to pay 50 million squid a day, apparently. So. Come on, a groan's as good as a laugh. Every comedian knows that.
Bear in mind, these people have been to many pantomimes. Yes.
But...
Conservative leader Michael Howard has launched an all-out attack on the UK Independence Party following polls which suggest it's stealing votes from the Tories in the Euro elections. Claims that the party is just a bunch of old-fashioned Little Englanders were rejected by the chief UKIP spokesperson, Captain George Mannering of the Warmington-on-Sea Home Guard. Chris, welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you.
Who's got motorists over a barrel?
Ah, this is excellent. This is oil price rises. On Wednesday last, oil prices went up to $42 a barrel. And we all went round going, oh, $42 a barrel, never thought I'd see the day. Like, we have any clue what a barrel of oil would actually cost on any other day of the week. And it's apparently bad news because it's a fuel crisis. But, of course, there isn't a fuel crisis. It's just we're talking about one because we can't wait till there is one. Because as soon as there's a fuel crisis, we can get into the business of being British and queuing at the fuel pumps and going down to the petrol station with buckets and filling them and taking them back into the garage and going, we're safe now. You're not safe. You've got buckets of petrol in your garage. There'll be pensioners mugging each other for beans and middle-class people panic buying bread makers. It'll be a disaster. Yeah.
I'm not really an economist, so I don't really understand it when they say that they will resolve this crisis by getting various OPEC members to produce more oil, as if by producing more oil, they will eventually produce so much oil that will get bored of oil and not want to buy it, and then the price will drop.
They don't even need to do that. All they have to do is make smaller barrels. everything comes down.
Well, I tell you, it's rather annoying the way our oil's ended up under their sand.
Yeah.
As a result of political turmoil in the Middle East, crude oil has reached its highest price in 14 years. In some parts of Britain, petrol now costs more than £1 a litre, which makes it still a lot cheaper than lager, and it tastes a whole lot better too. Armando, what anniversary is landing this week?
This is the D-Day landings, which all heads of state and news quiz panellists are attending. George Bush made a speech this week comparing the war in Iraq with the war against Germany and Japan, which is a rather worrying analogy since that war ended with the dropping of two atomic bombs, which gives us some insight into how he's thinking, if he is, indeed. And security is very tight to the extent that they're threatening to shoot down any planes that fly over. And there are going to be swarms of security men on the beaches, so it will actually look like the D-Day landings.
Schroeder's going, you know.
Schroeder
is going,
yes.
For the first time. Well, he's going to try and find out what went wrong, make sure it doesn't happen next time.
It's a commemoration of the D-Day landings on the Normandy beaches almost 60 years ago today. George Bush flew into Italy on Thursday, where he planned to commemorate the liberation of Rome by paying visits to the Eiffel Tower, the Acropolis and the Taj Mahal. Many have criticised the fact that for the first time a German national leader will be present at the commemoration ceremony. But the Queen insisted that she had to go. Alan, listen to this. To the chief, Alan, who wasn't hailing the Iraqis' choice of chief this week.
I always think of it as hail to the chef. It's something you actually want to... This is very difficult to answer, Simon, because it's about the new Iraqi president, prime minister, treasurer, secretary of state, none of which will be there by the time the repeat goes out. But America, in its brave and bold attempt to set up democratic government in Iraq, has made it. And they have decided that these people will henceforth govern Iraq, and they're all their chums. But gradually, rather like ducks passing by in a shooting gallery, these unfortunate people are being plugged.
The Americans didn't get their man in. They wanted Pachachi, because George Bush liked him on Happy Days. He was going to make Thon's foreign minister. Mr. Cunningham was going to handle police.
No, they were quite happy with the fact that their first choice for president didn't get in because, of course, America's first choice for president didn't get in.
The US choice for president of Iraq, Adnan Pachachi, stood aside to allow Sheikh Ghazi Yawar to take the post, paving the way for a new UN resolution recognising the interim government. A plan has been prepared to speed up the withdrawal of troops from Iraq. It's known as the US presidential elections. So at the end of round one, everybody has 4 points. And we start round two with a notice spotted in the dressing room of the King's Theatre, Albert Road, Southsea.
Please operate blinds carefully. Do not use violence.
Oh. And thanks to Brian Perkins of Surrey for spotting that. Linda,
my cutting.
You said you got lots of cutting.
Yes, but that was my good one.
Linda, whose wedding plans have made him look a proper Charlie?
Don't know, don't care.
Right.
But why doesn't Brian Perkins tell us? I'll rise above this situation. This is Camilla and Prince Charles, or as I like to think of them, Rod Hull and Emu. I believe this pertains to the fact that it may be possible for them to marry, that the Archbishop of Canterbury has said, well, strictly speaking, yes, you were having an adulterous affair, but, oh, go on then, if you just do it quietly in Gloucester, you can get married. But, of course, the Queen hasn't necessarily agreed to this, because that's the one barrier now, apparently. I don't think she's over keen. I don't know.
In this Rod Hull emu analogy that you so successfully launched earlier. Which is which?
I would have thought that was obvious, really.
Yes.
Yeah. The one that looks like Rod Hull is Rod Hull. And the one that looks like Emu is Emu.
And how far up does the arm go?
How far would you like it to go up? Judging by the look on his face, quite a long way.
I've been waiting 65 years for a knighthood and I've buggered it tonight.
Oh, no, you haven't.
This is a confusion surrounding whether or not the current Archbishop of Canterbury has given permission for Charles and Camilla to marry. Under the Royal Marriage Act of 1772, Charles needs to get permission from the ruling monarch. But Tony's been a bit tied up with Iraq and hasn't got back to him yet. Chris, listen to this.
We already told you, turn them off.
Which ringing change has topped the charts this week?
The British phonographic industry, as I misread it on News 24, British pornographic industry, this week reveals that they're going to have charts for ringtones off the internet, which is appalling. It costs about £4, apparently, to download these things. £4 for everybody on the bus to hate you. And you can download, because now you can apparently download all these different things. You can download the latest songs, or you can download the sounds of cows mooing. I really want a hidebound middle-class ringtone, so that when my phone goes off, he goes, I'm terribly sorry, it's your phone. It's awfully embarrassing. I had a friend who, you know, used to be able to record your own on these phones. So my friend had his ringtone was him going.
I can go one better than that, because I recorded mine as me just going ring. Ring.
Actually, rather a lovely thing on a train. There was this man shouting into his mobile, talking about, you know, some business he was doing, and a little old lady just leaned across the aisle and sort of tapped him on the arm and said, could you be a bit more quiet, dear? Nobody's interested in your conference.
The week has seen the publication of the first official pop chart based on the sale of mobile ringtones. The singles chart could eventually merge with the ringtone and internet download charts. So we'd have the new World Cup song at number 3, the Star Wars theme at 2, and a picture of Jenny Bond in a corset at number 1. 2 points to Chris. Armando, who's put a new wrinkle on a prehistoric problem?
The clue is in wrinkle and prehistoric. They found the fossilized remains of a wrinkly dinosaur. That's the bit I understand. The bit I don't understand is that they said that it provided a clue as to how the continents may have shifted billions of years ago.
It's 95 million years old, which is why it's wrinkly.
And, do you think think dinosaurs do that? I'm 95 million years old.
All my own teeth. Yeah. In a museum.
Vegetarian, you see.
These particular dinosaurs occur in about 4 different places on different sets of tectonic. I mean, I only have a smattering of dinosaur, I don't speak it fluently. But there are the various tectonic plates are inhabited by various bits of this dinosaur.
Because they thought that those plates split apart 120 million years ago, the ones with South America and one with Africa and one with India. They thought they split apart 120 million years ago. But this dinosaur was around 100 million years ago, thereby proving that it could sail.
Yeah. Also explains the Isle of Wight.
Nothing explains the Isle of Wight.
These dinosaurs that they've found have, along the nose ridge, they have 7 holes on either side, which proves that they evolved into shoes. Or possibly ocarinas. They could play a musical instrument, these dinosaurs. The entertainers, the minstrels of the dinosaur world. Go on, name a tune. I bet I can play it. Go on. I can do them all.
The wrinkle-faced Rugops primus, a new species of dinosaur discovered in the Sahara, has provided fresh clues about how the continents separated nearly 100 million years ago. Yes, 100 million years ago. Antarctica, South America, India, Australia, Madagascar and Africa were all one single landmass. And still are in the mind of George W. Bush. Alan, who's still on track for a bonus despite their late arrival.
Yeah, but these ghastly people. I came here to Southsea. My train did. I don't normally go on trains very much. It's only when the news quiz actually goes abroad that I get on a train, because I really rather like driving or walking. Because whenever I've got on a train, it's usually for the news quiz. Like the last time I went to Brighton last year, and I got on it, and I sat there for an hour, and then I got off again and hailed a cab. It was very expensive, because trains don't actually go anywhere. And I think one of this bunch of shifty bastards has just lost £1 million. Oh, no, they've lost £750 million. It's about those crap trains and the crap people who are responsible for them, isn't it?
Yes.
Really awful.
Who was the rail, I love that word, provider that we came down on today? What train was it? Southwest trains. No, I like Virgin trains. I think I love the name Virgin. It's sort of like, never done it before, heard there was some money in it. But I think the best one of all is Connex. There's a refreshing honesty about that you've got to admire.
In the paper, it said that Network Rail was costing the taxpayer £21 billion a year. It always says the taxpayer, but it never specifies which taxpayer. I was thinking some poor sod in Grantchester who answers his door and goes, oh, God, £21 billion. Ugh. Can't wait till I'm paid on Friday.
The buses of Network Rail are to receive bonuses of up to £100,000 each, despite making a £758 million loss last year and failing to meet their targets. The Deputy Chief Executive, Ian Kutcher, says, we're undertaking unprecedented levels of activity out on the ground and renewing tired and worn out infrastructure that has been starved of steady investment for many years, which translates as we're going to bomb Southampton. And at the end of round two, Linda and Chris, Armando and Alan are all level still. Yeah. And before we start the final round, here's a notice seen on a restaurant's entrance doors.
Linda, would you like to read this?
Day five and tension is beginning to show.
Due to a private function, the Spey restaurant will close at 4:30 p.m. Sorry for any incontinences caused.
Thanks to Graham and Julia Wells of Nettlebed for that. Linda, listen to this. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Linda, where did a white wedding turn out to be a rash decision?
Well, actually, quite near Southampton this happened. Well, the headline was sort of groom breaks out in a rash before a wedding. I thought, well, that's probably quite normal, isn't it? You get a bit sort of antsy, don't you? And he went down to the hall to check it all out, and there was this white powder everywhere, this powder that made him itch. A powder that was making him itch. He was itching because of the powder. They were thinking, what could this itching causing powder be? So they call in a scientist who comes in a helicopter, 50 firemen, fire engines, ambulances, they're all covered. There's the mother of the bride in this lovely lilac number covered in a chemical weapons suit and a big visor over her hat. And guess what in the end? Guess what this itchy powder turned out to be? Well, let me just say, a teenager is helping the police with their inquiries.
I love that they sent a scientist to investigate this powder in a helicopter. Well, I can't see any powder. Well, it was here before you came with a helicopter.
Well, Richard Clarke and his fiancée had their wedding turn into a full-scale bioterrorism alert when a white powder was found spread around their reception marquee in the grounds of Bishop's Waltham Palace. It was at Bishop's Waltham Palace that Henry V prepared for his invasion of France on what is believed to have been Britain's first ever booze cruise. Chris, who's gone prawn crackers for our green and sceptred isle?
Oh, this is lovely. In Shanghai, there is a housing crisis. And one of the ways that they're dealing with the housing crisis, they're building these satellite towns, and each of them is of a different character. But the biggest is called Thames Town, and it's a replica of an English town. So it starts in the middle with medieval buildings, and it radiates out to these Victorian houses. And it's an exact replica of an English village. It's got a Chinese takeaway. They're building a big dedicated rail link, and they're not going to use it. It's fantastic. It's outstanding. So they're going to have 9 universities in it, including 2 proper ones.
Can you put on... Can you wear, like in Disneyland, do people go around in big English costumes? Which is
string vests.
This is Thames Town, a new suburb of Shanghai, modelled entirely on a typical British town. Each new Chinese home comes with a conservatory, a garage, and a mysterious tub of red sauce no one could remember ordering. Armando, why can't you please psalm of the people all of the time?
This is an updated Bible question. Every 122 years, Venus passes in front of the sun. Every 22 months, someone brings out an updated version of the Bible, and the traditionalists go mad, they go mental, because they believe the Bible should be written in the language that God spoke, which was 17th century English. I am probably the only person on this panel who has spent 3 years attempting a PhD on 17th century religious English language. However, having spent 3 years...
Aren't you Dr. Armando Iannucci?
I said 3 years attempting.
Right.
And my conclusion was that 17th century religious English is incomprehensible. Is very nice, but God probably doesn't answer prayers as spoken in the High Anglican Church because he doesn't know what they mean, because it's law, therefore we beseech thee, to thine Ian as before, heretofore thinest, as in Ian as if, we thereunto, who says thereunto?
It doesn't really matter what language people speak the Lord's Prayer in. Nobody can hear it anyway. All that you ever hear is, Our Father, heaven, name.
They should actually bring out prayers to be used during a chemical attack.
Lord of all Father.
Some of the best-known prayers and psalms have been radically rewritten in a compilation to be published soon by the Church of England. The Lord's Prayer has been rewritten by an unknown author, though the opening line, Our Father, who art in number 10, may be a clue. Give us this day our daily bread has been rewritten as 75p for a sliced white, you're having a laugh, ain't you, Gob? So, 2 points to Armando, plus an extra point is a consolation for not getting his PhD. Alan, why has the sport of kings gone to the dogs?
Oh, this is rather appealing. There's a dog called something absolutely fabulous or absolutely special. Or special fabulous. Anyway, whatever it is. There was a race at Kempton Park over 2 furlongs, I think, 400 metres. A dog outran a horse. And it was actually faster off the blocks than a Ferrari. The dog does 0 to 30 in about 1 second and runs like hell.
God, that must have been a tiny jockey on the dog.
They said it proved that dogs were faster than horses.
Well, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that was obvious, wasn't it?
But it's the sort of test you... If you wanted to prove dogs were faster than horses, that is the sort of test you would do.
In a race at Kempton Park this week, a greyhound beat a horse to be named the fastest animal in the racing world. As the winner, the dog was given a special feast. As the loser, the feast turned out to be the horse. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
Well, luckily, Simon, I've got a spare cutting here because... always wise to have one. There's a lot of thieving backstage. This was sent in from the Sunderland Advertiser. It's the TV listings. Channel 5, 7:40, Make Way for Noddy. Children's animated series. Noddy touches something he shouldn't in... in Big Ear's house. And finds himself in a topsy-turvy world.
Chris.
This is from, I'm indebted to Barbara and Mike Graham, who have sent this in from Melbourne in Australia, an advert from the Paken and Berwick Gazette. Sex for Life, new service by the Advanced Medical Institute for men with all types of impotence. Consultation with a qualified doctor over the phone in the privacy of your own home or office. Nasal delivery system option.
Armando.
I am just as indebted as Chris was to his correspondent, to Margaret Mann, and it's an advert from a local letting agent. It says, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to all our landlords and tenants. Our opening hours are as follows. Closed 5:30 p.m. 23rd December to 29th of December. New Year's Day closed.
Alan.
Well, Simon, you remember last week's news quiz. I promised that in homage and gratitude to that great and good man, I was going to dedicate the rest of my cuttings for the rest of the series to George Bush. I've got one from the Daily Telegraph. It isn't pollution that's harming the environment. It's the impurities in our air and water that are doing it.
Thank you all, and let's look at the final score. Linda and Chris have 16, but thanks to my unique scoring system, Armando and Alan have 17 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from M500, the magazine of the Open University Mathematics Society.
Police in Jiangsu in China, who jailed the members of two prostitution rings, said that all of the women were over 70 years old. This is not just a moral issue, a spokesman from the vice squad explained. More seriously, these people are clearly contravening the terms of their pension by continuing to work.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Linda Smith, Chris Addison, Amanda Iannucci and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and George Poles. The panellists' inflatable rafts were supplied by Jazz Hammerhead and the producer was Simon Nichols.